Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. This Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on a shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcast or a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home, and find internet links for global news sources. Please check it out and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Russia's Sputnik Radio, and Radio Havana Cuba. We will begin with Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Germany and most other European countries are greatly increasing their military spending in response to the invasion of Ukraine. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute released a report on who is buying and who is selling all types of weaponry. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Germany has decided in principle to buy F-35 fighter jets from the U.S. That's according to new reports citing government sources. Now, Berlin plans to drastically beef up military spending as a result of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. It's not alone. Denmark and Sweden say they're also raising their military spending over the coming years. Now, traditionally, larger nations have spent more on defense. In 2020, the U.S. with a whopping $780 billion budgeted for defense. China only $252 billion on its military. But that still dwarfs Germany with 53 billion euros, or dollars, I should say. Now, that year, Russia had a military budget of $62 billion. That's 10 times what Ukraine spent. And while it seems much smaller than China or the U.S., it represents a greater share of the Russian economy. So which companies are the biggest players in defense? Well, U.S. company Lockheed Martin makes the F-35. That's one of the largest in the industry with sales of $66 billion last year. It's followed by Europe's Airbus and two more U.S. companies, Raytheon Technologies and Boeing. Now, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute tracks military expenditures around the world. I asked their senior researcher, Lucie Barod-Soudreau, to put recent events into perspective.
We are seeing at the moment strong announcements all across Europe, in particular for increased military expenditure, but also in Canada, which is also a NATO member. And of course, countries are reacting to the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. And countries are actually now making decisions to increase their military expenditure and reaching the 2% target set by NATO, something they have been asked to do since 2014, but are now really making a move towards.
One of those countries, of course, Germany, announcing that it wants to stay with the 2% of GDP level for defense expenditures. So are we saying that we're seeing more countries that are spending that haven't traditionally spent as much in the past? Is that fair to say? Or is it more the usual suspects, China, the U.S., Russia?
What we are seeing is that an acceleration of the trend, in particular in Europe. So European countries had been already increasing their military expenditure for the past few years, in particular since 2014 and then Russia's annexation of Crimea. But this trend is actually accelerating. So there were increases that had been announced, but now there are increases on top of increases, so to speak. So countries, let's say, for instance, like Sweden or Poland, were already saying they were going to increase their military expenditure, but now they say they're going to increase even more. So we're going to see Europe as one of the key regions driving military spending forward in the coming years, not just the usual suspects, as you were mentioning. I think one key question when it comes to Europe or NATO as a whole is how to coordinate all those increases. There are going to be billions of euros or dollars going to the demobilization of armed forces, but how to make sure this is done in a coordinated fashion, that we don't duplicate, when we don't, you know, waste money in the process. I think there will be a really strong role for NATO and the EU in making sure that this is done in a coordinated fashion.
That report was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channel called DW News. Next, Sputnik Radio. On his program called Going Underground, Afshin Ratansi spoke with Professor Saeed Mohammad Marandi of the University of Tehran. He discusses ongoing negotiations with the U.S. to restart the Iran nuclear deal, the JCPOA, and the impact of the American sanctions on Tehran. He also talks about Russia's invasion of Ukraine, why Iran opposes the invasion, and the consequences for U.S. hegemony and the unipolar world order. He also criticizes the media for cheerleading a war and compares it to the coverage of the first Gulf War, shock and awe. Sputnik Radio.
Let's go straight to Vienna and speak to Professor Mohammad Marandi of Tehran University. Presumably you're glad that the apparently sanctions have been lifted on President Raisi. On the president and recognition of Iran ally Venezuela's President Maduro. Is the IAEA changing attitudes towards Iran, and do you expect now the deal to go through?
The expectation in Iran is that all these brutal sanctions are removed. They were never justified. There was never any evidence that Iran was seeking a nuclear weapon. The intrusive sanctions that we've had in Tehran, in Iran, for years have proven that. But the United States and its allies have always used any excuse available to antagonize Iran and to hurt ordinary Iranians. The United States accuses Iran of terrorism, whereas the United States has surrounded Iran with military bases. It has killed senior Iranian officials. With the Israelis, it's assassinated people, and it has been helping terrorist groups in Syria and Iraq and elsewhere. So the real problem is not Iran, which is in this neighborhood. It is the United States, which is oppressing Iranians, which is strangling Iranians, and which is threatening Iranians thousands of kilometers, a mile or miles away from its own border. So our hope is that the sanctions regime will end, whether it's in Iran or Venezuela or Cuba or Nicaragua or Yemen or Syria or Afghanistan. All of these are unjust and barbaric. The Iranians only accepted negotiations with the United States once they accepted Iran's right to enrich uranium. That was the key. So it was the United States that backed down. Although Obama was the first person to initiate these maximum pressure sanctions targeting women and children and killing innocent people, it was only when he saw that it was a dead end that he had to accept Iran's rights. But I think that that era is coming to an end. The United States, when it has to come to Iran and seek some sort of solution with the country, when it has to go to Venezuela, when they confiscated or stolen Venezuelan assets and they chose their own president for the country, but now they have to go and seek the Venezuelan leadership for negotiations and for oil, that shows that the world is changing and the United States no longer is in the position that it had held before. And Iran recognizes that, and therefore Iran will be more assertive in defending its sovereignty than before, even though Iran has always been very assertive in that regard.
Have you been surprised at the global reaction to events in Ukraine? Obviously, Europe did what Washington wanted it to do, but as you mentioned, India not voting for the U.S. Condemnation or even deploring Russia's moves into Ukraine, Brazil's reaction, Pakistan's reaction. You been surprised that Or has this been a long time coming, the end of hegemonic Washington power?
Well, let me first mention one point, and that is that in 2003, when the Americans wanted to invade Iraq, we hated Saddam Hussein more than anyone else. He used chemical weapons against us, of course, with European and American support. They gave him that capability, the military intelligence and the political cover to get away with very huge chemical attacks, which I survived two of those attacks, and many people didn't. But we were opposed to the war. I took part in the anti-war protests in London, and the Iranian government opposed the war because it was not legitimate. And even if the UN Security Council had approved it, it would not have been legitimate to Iran. And therefore, Iran does not consider this war to be legitimate. When it opposes war against Saddam, it will oppose a war against Ukraine as well. But I think what we are seeing now is the rapid decline of NATO and the United States and its power, because the United States has already been on the decline. We saw that over the last few years, the divisions in the United States, the economic crisis, the social and political crisis that we saw there. We see the decline in Europe and the rise of alternative powers that are standing up against the old order.
Over here we hear that NATO has never been more united, actually.
Well, they can be as united as they want, but the point is that they are becoming increasingly weakened, and their sanctions on Russia will backfire because Russia has the resources and the minerals and the oil and gas that they need. And the Russians will sanction them as well. And as the United States and the Europeans are trying to crush Russia in the Ukraine, and the Russians are trying to crush NATO in Ukraine, that weakens all of these powers. And the Global South simply watches. Of course, this war is going to create enormous problems for the world. I think it will create starvation in parts of the world because of the rising price of grains and wheat. But in any case, I think that we are seeing a changing world. We're seeing the end of the current world order. We're moving towards, I think, a multipolar world of disorder, where you're going to have different poles. But I think there's going to be a lot of disorder coming. I think the times ahead are going to be very, very difficult for everyone, but we are going to see the decline of the United States more rapid than before. If it was an ideal world, the Western media, instead of cheerleading the war, I mean, I would imagine from their narratives that this is what North Korea would be, something like the BBC today and CNN today. When you watch them, it's just disgusting. They're just cheerleaders for war. But when the war on Iraq was taking place, they were cheerleading the occupation. Shock and awe wasn't a bad thing back then. When chemical weapons were being given to Saddam to use against Iranians, and the city of Halabja, where in one attack 5,500 people were massacred, they were silent about it.
Just quickly, I need to go back to, go to Turkey, where, of course, there was this extraordinary meeting between foreign ministers. It didn't seem to be peace negotiations. What do you think about Turkey's position, given it's a NATO member and Russia can switch off its S-400 system at a stroke?
Well, the Turkish president is a person who is constantly shifting his position. One day he's against Israel. The next day he's hosting the Israeli president. One day he's friends with the Syrian president and they go out with their families together. The next day he's assisting ISIS and al-Qaeda to destroy the country and to overthrow the Syrian government. But now, basically, what the Turkish government has done is that they've destroyed their credibility across the globe. No one trusts President Erdogan, whether it's Ukraine or Russia or NATO or even the Israeli regime or regional countries.
What is the latest you're hearing about the bombing of Damascus, one of the oldest inhabited cities of the world, just this week by UK, US, EU nation armed Israeli warplanes?
Well, when the Israeli regime bombs Damascus, they are violating international law. But in the Western media, it's fine. When they're starving Yemen, a war which is far worse than Ukraine, and thousands of British advisors are helping keep the Saudi Air Force afloat, we don't hear that in the media. These cheerleaders on the BBC and CNN and elsewhere are silent about that. It's utterly racist. But when it comes to Syria, I think one of the interesting things is that, first of all, these are not Islamists, just as the neo-Nazis and the Nazis in Europe are not Christian. These are extremist groups that are used as tools by Western powers, by the Israelis, by Erdogan, by NATO, and by oil-rich despots in the region that have been allies of the United States, just as the neo-Nazis are being used and just as the Contra rebels were being used against the Nicaraguans. The Americans and the Europeans use these extremists because it's like shock and awe. It's like in Iraq. The Americans were proud of shock and awe. What was shock and awe? It was to create fear among ordinary Iranians. It was to make Iraqis in awe of American might, which is utterly barbaric. That's why they use extremists in Syria. That's why they use extremists in Europe. That's why they use extremists in the global south.
Obviously, Washington and Brussels denies that, Professor Mohamed Barandi. Thank you.
That excerpted interview is by Afshin Ratansi from his program called Going Underground on Sputnik Radio, the current name for the Voice of Russia, available online at rt.com. YouTube is now blocking everything broadcast by RT or Russia Today. Once more, I listened to more than 15 hours of international broadcasting to create this show and was again disheartened to find nothing but Ukraine war coverage with basically the same stories and biases I have heard on American media. Not a word about the climate, Yemen, Julian Assange's failed appeal, or the Saudi beheadings. And the blockings of RT on YouTube makes the list of censored news even worse. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could assist me by supporting this listener-funded program, I may be reached through the website and PayPal or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California 95490. Please help me continue producing this weekly show, which I freely distribute to radio stations and the Internet. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. President Obrador of Mexico is promoting the integration of Latin American and Caribbean countries. The UK Supreme Court denied the appeal to stop the extradition of Julian Assange to the US. Activists from around the world launched a campaign demanding an end to the siege on Yemen. Last Saturday, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia beheaded 81 people on terrorism charges. Then a viewpoint on the oversimplification of seeing the world divided into good guys and bad guys. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Mexican President Andrés Manuel López Obrador highlighted on Monday the need for the integration of Latin America and Caribbean countries. Argentina recently proposed a strategic cooperation alliance between Mexico, Brazil, and Argentina, known as MBA. Speaking at a press conference, the Mexican president said in addition to working on the basis of the alliance, it is important to strengthen Latin American and Caribbean integration mechanisms. He pointed out that the MBA would promote a vision of an integrated Latin American region for more effective and complete democracy, as well as to achieve a fairer distribution of income. López Obrador affirmed that just as the European Union was once the European Community, so should the entire American continent be integrated. As well as consolidating trade alliance with the U.S. and Canada, he also highlighted the importance of strengthening links with Central America, in particular due to the migratory issue. López Obrador called for support for Central America jointly and for the integration of the entire continent. Finally, the head of state concluded with a review of upcoming international commitments, including his visits to Central America and Cuba in May, and possibly to Argentina the following month. Thousands of demonstrators gathered in Brasilia, the capital of Brazil, last week to protest President Jair Bolsonaro's siege on the environment. Demonstrations were called by one of the country's leading musicians, Caetano Veloso, who denounced what environmentalists call a historic assault on the Brazilian environment under President Jair Bolsonaro. The Ato Pela Terra, or Stand for the Earth demonstration, was held in Brasilia to oppose what activists call, quote, death combo of five environment-related bills being considered by Brazil's Congress. The United Kingdom's Supreme Court has denied WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange his latest appeal against extradition to the United States. A court spokesman said that Assange's application, quote, did not raise an arguable point of law. The final decision on his extradition now lays with UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. If she approves the extradition request, Assange could be sent to the United States, where he faces up to 175 years in prison on espionage charges, after his company released footage exposing US war crimes in Iraq and in Afghanistan. The BBC reports that the WikiLeaks document revealed how the US military had killed hundreds of civilians in unreported incidents during the war in Afghanistan, while leaked Iraq war files showed 66,000 civilians had been killed and prisoners tortured by Iraqi forces. Assange had been appealing the ruling, which accepted a package of assurances by the United States, including that Assange would not be held in a maximum security prison and that he could be transferred to Australia to serve his sentence if convicted. However, evidence of CIA intentions either to kidnap, poison, or kill Assange have been revealed, throwing these assurances into doubt. Assange's lawyer said the decision to extradite him based on U.S. pledges was, quote, highly disturbing. Responding to the Supreme Court's decision, a spokesperson for Assange's solicitors said, quote, "We regret that the opportunity has not been taken to consider the troubling circumstances in which requesting states can provide caveated guarantees after the conclusion of a full evidential hearing." Assange's lawyers have said that he has not ruled out launching a final appeal. Activists, human rights defenders, and media professionals around the world launched an international campaign on social media demanding an end to the siege on Yemen, the country facing the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. The campaign was launched under the title End the Siege on Yemen, with the aim of shedding light on the forgotten suffering of the Yemeni people as a result of economic and military aggression against the country by the Saudi-led coalition. Yemen is living under tragic humanitarian conditions at all levels due to the arbitrary siege imposed on the country by the Saudi-led coalition. The Minister of Information in Sana'a, in the government, Daifala al-Shami, expressed, quote, "Thanks, appreciation, and gratitude to the free voices from all over the world who feel the suffering of our Yemeni people, who will not forget these sincere stances and will reciprocate loyally." The United Children's Fund, or UNICEF, has highlighted that Yemeni children are, quote, "the first and most to suffer from the war in the country." UNICEF reported that at least 10,000 minors were killed or injured and 400,000 are malnourished since the Saudi-led coalition launched its aggression against Yemen in 2015. Philippe Duhamely, the UNICEF representative to Yemen, pointed out that 47 children were reportedly killed or maimed in several locations across the country in the first 2 months of this year. In total, the United Nations verified that more than 10,200 children have been killed or injured since the beginning of the war. However, he stressed that the actual number is likely much higher. The Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has beheaded 81 people on March the 12th, accused on terrorism-related charges. The news was met with outrage from human rights organizations and governments worldwide. Michelle Bachelet, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, released on Monday, March the 14th, a statement condemning the mass executions that exceeds the total number carried out in all of 2021. She also called on the Saudi regime to put an immediate moratorium on executions. Bachelet highlighted that some of those executed did not undergo a fair trial. She also expressed concern that, quote, "some of the executions appear to be linked to the ongoing armed conflict in Yemen. The implementation of death sentences followed trials that do not offer the required fair trial guarantees is prohibited by international human rights and humanitarian law and may amount to a war crime." Meanwhile, Saudi press agency reported that all the executed were, quote, "found guilty of committing multiple heinous crimes and had links to terrorist organizations." However, Bachelet said that amongst those who were put to death last week were 41 individuals from the Shia minority inside Saudi Arabia who had participated in anti-government protests in 2011 and 12, 7 Yemeni nationals and 1 Syrian national. Bachelet noted that the Saudi legal system terrorism has, quote, an extremely broad definition of terrorism, and that it, quote, risks criminalizing people exercising their rights to freedom of expression and peaceful assembly. Pashley further noted that Saudi authorities to bring the country's counter-terrorism laws fully into line with international standards and appealed to the Saudi authorities to, quote, halt all executions, immediately establish a moratorium on the use of the death penalty and commute the death sentences against those on death row. Saudi Arabia has regularly been criticized by rights groups for its use of the death penalty and has one of the highest rates of executions amongst the 38 countries where capital punishment is still implemented.
The generation born a few years after the end of World War II were captured by innocence, which led them to believe that the world is simple because it's only made up of good guys and bad guys. That the former always win, the latter are doomed to failure, and all endings are happy. They believed in a fantasy world, sweetened by Walt Disney and Marvel Comics, with the label Made in USA. The world worn Made in USA. And another innocent fact, perhaps the most dangerous of all, was to believe that everything coming from there was necessarily good. These memories come to mind because these days in the United States another brutal simplification of the world is being made with bad guys and good guys. The bad ones are the Russians and the good ones are the Yankees. Those who are not on one side are necessarily on the other. Since the beginning of the special military operation ordered by Moscow in Ukraine, the President of the United States, Joseph Biden, is intoxicating the public opinion of his country with phrases such as Putin's war, Putin's oil price, and that everything today is Putin's fault. The 14,000 dead in the Donbass, victims of the shelling by the Kyiv army and neo-Nazi groups equipped, by the way, with American and European weapons, disappeared from the mainstream media. Although the White House acknowledged it and China demanded explanations, nothing is said about the U.S. biological laboratories discovered in Ukraine by the evil Russians. Journalist David Brooks reports that when University of Chicago professor John Mearsheimer asked Washington to acknowledge his guilt in that conflict, he was subjected to an intense smear campaign. One of the good guys in this story, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, asked if there's not a Brutus in Moscow to assassinate President Putin to end this problem. The United States is a specialist in changing history, and many who haven't lost their innocence truly believe that it won World War II and Vietnam. Forget about the genocide of Hiroshima and Nagasaki and think that everything Washington does is for the freedom of mankind.
Those reports and viewpoint were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, though the podcasts are not updated. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows. Please consider making a safe donation online through PayPal. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. This shortwave report, which will complete its 25th year of production in April, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. This shortwave report is produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.